Welcome to CRE Tech Talks. This podcast series is brought to you by Building Engines, providing web and mobile property management software to innovative commercial real estate owners, managers, and the clients they serve for over 14 years. And now a man with a natural curiosity who laid in his twin bed as a boy and wondered where his brother was, Building Engines Senior Vice President, Scott Sidney.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Scott Sidman, your host, Senior Vice President at Building Engines. Our podcast today is about something that we typically don't talk about. So is commercial real estate in the United States ready to harness the value of sunlight to provide affordable fixed-rate energy to power their offices? Although in our podcast we've tended to focus on software-based commercial real estate technology, it's energy-related technology that perhaps has the potential for the greatest impact on the bottom line, and perhaps solar is ready for prime time and something more owners should consider. How do you know if your building is a candidate for solar, what's involved, and what the potential savings are? Our guest today is here to help answer those questions. Phil Cavallo is the CEO of Beaumont Solar, a full-service provider of renewable energy systems based right here in Massachusetts. Phil, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for inviting me. Great to be here today.
Terrific. The way we typically do this is if you could tell me a little bit about yourself, your background, how you got into the solar.
Yeah, interesting way to back into this business. I happen to be an electrical engineer by education. I came to Massachusetts years ago to work for Raytheon. And Raytheon being a Department of Defense company, I quickly realized that there were other things that I wanted to do with my life other than build shipboard missile systems for a living. So I took the entrepreneurial route and decided to get into an area called CAD-CAM, which also happens to be a couple of companies that were based here in Massachusetts, Applicon and its competitor Computer Vision, pretty famous companies of the day back in the early 80s. And I spent a bunch of years in that industry jumping from one company to another that actually went IPO and were very successful. But then I moved into telecommunications, which also had its heyday. And as everybody knows, the dot-com crisis hit somewhere around the end of 2000. And with that, it was time to move on and to get into some other space. Eventually, I ended up deciding that I wanted to build a community-based company. And I didn't want to travel the world, and I was managing resources in India and a bunch of other places around the globe. So my wife and I decided that we were going to buy a small little sign company that was very profitable based in the humble city of New Bedford, Massachusetts, which happens to be a top-grossing fishing port in the state and in the country, which people don't know, but it's about a $1 billion industry in the city of New Bedford.
Right.
So we bought this sign company, and about 3 months after I bought it, and a lot of people ask me this, boy, that was really clairvoyant for you to take a sign company and turn it into solar. Did you know that ahead of time? And the answer is no, I didn't. I wish I could take claim for that, but I wasn't that much of a genius. But once I got there, I realized that, hey, we have crane trucks and we have construction crews and we have people that can put electrical equipment up on the roof of a building. Why don't we just try doing this solar thing? And one of the previous owners who's still with me today, 10 or 11 years later, said, yeah, well, we could give it a shot. And the magic ingredient was I was the electrical engineer, so I understood how this could be done, and certainly a sign company wouldn't have a clue. And a lot of people laughed at me when I first said I'm going into the solar industry. And today, 11 years later, we've grown our revenue by more than tenfold, and the company's very successful. We sold off the sign business 4 years ago.
Wow. What an amazing story. That's an incredible trajectory, right?
Yeah.
For a career path. We also think in the software business about software pivots. Mm-hmm. You know, companies starting out doing one thing and realizing that it's not the market they thought they were in, and then pivoting and adjusting and growing. That's an amazing pivot.
I said it was same skills, different market.
Right.
And when I bought the company, I said, you know, we have 1,800 customers. This company's been around since 1918.
Yeah.
And they're loyal customers, great reputation of a company. What else can we sell to?
That's how it came about. Great. Well, tell us about Beaumont Solar kind of in its current iteration.
We're a company today of about 70 people. We have a long track record of being in the solar industry, as the intro says. We started at about 2007 in the solar business at its infancy in Massachusetts. It was already rolling pretty good in California, but Massachusetts just getting off the ground. We were able to start doing off-Broadway performances, which I call residential, and doing sort of some smaller 5-kilowatt systems. And we said, naturally, we're going to go into commercial, and now we're 100% commercial company, doing commercial and utility scale solar power plants. So large office buildings, large warehouses, big green fields, and the largest project that we've built 20,000 panels on 31 acres, providing power to the town of Lakeville and the Silver Lake Regional School District. You know, very exciting business, though, for us to be in.
How many projects have you done?
Total number of projects, around 200.
Okay.
And about 35 megawatts total installed at this point in time.
Terrific. Let's jump and talk about solar in the commercial real estate space. There's a lot going on there.
You know, it's interesting, Scott, as it relates to your business, because when you think about managing resources in a property, you think about office equipment and inventory, and you think about your infrastructure and how you're managing that property, and you also think about energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start thinking about energy and you go, okay, this building has a footprint of 400,000 square feet, for example, a building of that size in terms of footprint, not overall square footage of the building itself, that has a pretty significant power consumption ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at that and say, well, you know, we could probably put 3 or 4 megawatts on a roof of that size. And that would generate somewhere around 5 million kilowatt hours a year, which is a sizable piece. And when you're thinking about facility managing its energy consumption, you're actually producing the energy at the source of the load. So it's the most efficient way to manage a property. That way you're not paying the wires fees, you're not paying the generation fees for some coal plant or some nuke plant or some other gas-fired power plant to generate the power with a fossil fuel and then ship it across the wires to get to your facility, generating right there.
So it seems to make a lot of sense. What are the things you're fighting?
You know, general misconception is, oh, not on my roof. We get major accounts that call us and say, hey, we're very interested in solar, but we're really afraid of putting solar on our roof.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is why? Well, one is we're worried about snow load. We're worried about wind load. We're worried about the age of the roof. And then they're worried about fire. So, you know, we can kind of take those and segment those out, if you like, to get to what the real issues are. But bottom line is, you know, we just completed a 2.2 megawatt system on a facility here in southeastern Massachusetts for Martinetti Companies, which is a very large regional distributor of fine wines and liquors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2.2 megawatts. We ended up with 4 pounds per square foot of collateral load. They designed the building for 8 pounds per square foot of collateral load. We happened to get in the project a little bit late. It was a brand new building. We said, well, gee, you don't really have to beef up the steel that much in this building in order to accommodate solar.
Mm-hmm.
And solar today has wind deflectors on it, has low profile. And when you look at a design in a monolithic way, it has a lot less wind drag, which means that you don't need as much weight to hold it down on the roof. But it's non-penetrating, it's non-intrusive solar, so that you're just placing it on the roof and you have sacrificial layers underneath of the solar to protect the roof material. And 4 pounds per square foot is not a lot of weight spread across a very large area.
Do you find there's a different conversation or perhaps an easier conversation for new construction or when you get in the new construction phase versus the built environment?
Well, most of the design that we do is retrofitting existing.
Okay. Yeah.
But new design, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Because you can specify everything right up front.
Yeah.
The type of roof material, the structure, even where the rooftop units are going to go, the air conditioning and the heating, and et cetera, that are on them, which can be an obstruction and gas pipes and things of that nature.
Is there also resistance based on the perceived capital outlay that a company has to go through?
The thing that's interesting about it is, yes, generally that's true. But when the CFOs and the CPAs look at it and they go, well, we will never get a return on investment that is equal to or greater than what solar is providing today, especially in aggressive solar states like New York State, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, places that have typically high power values and decent incentives to do solar. And they look at it and go, gee, I'm going to get a 33% rate of return on this. This is unbelievable. So the capital and the value of the capital outlay and the cost of the alternative uses of capital seem to really weigh in favor of solar once the analysis is done.
Yeah, that seems to make a lot of sense. Typically, when you engage with customers, when they're thinking about starting a conversation with solar, is it because they've done that thinking and analysis on their own, or is that you bringing that to them?
We bring that to the table. I'm glad you brought up capital, because the other option, which is very poorly understood in the industry in general, is that we can bring a third party to the table who will own and operate the system, and you can buy the solar power from that third party at a discount over a 20 or 25 year period.
Right.
Now you're not even using your working capital or line of credit to pay for the system and go through it. Now, it's always more beneficial if you have the tax appetite to own it yourself. If you really have the tax appetite for it, it's always more beneficial to go that way. But if you don't, or if you happen to be a nonprofit or some other situation, then a third party owns it, and then you just get the benefit of cheap power, locking your power rates, which is a big concern for folks, is locking the power rates in so they don't have this escalating variable that they don't have control of.
Okay. And why don't we stick with the financial model a little bit? Mm-hmm. So you have subsidies that are available. Mm-hmm. Talk about kind of the tax implications as well, some of the other drivers there.
The federal tax implications are that purchasing a system immediately, once the system is turned on, it's available for a 30% investment tax credit. If it's a $1 million system, you're essentially going to be relieved one for one, $300,000 on your federal tax returns. In addition to that, you will also get what's called a five-year modified accelerated cost recovery schedule, which is a depreciation schedule, with a 50% bonus in place up front. And that's good through 2020. Mm-hmm. So that same $1 million system would then have a basis of $850,000, 50% of which you could take as depreciation in year one. It's very accelerated in terms of you're looking at the cash flow and saying, all right, if I have a tax liability and I can take advantage of depreciation also from a capital equipment purchase, it really starts to accelerate.
It almost sounds too good to be true. Well, you're reducing your carbon footprint,
yeah.
Right?
You've
got
lower
this tax
cost
basis,
power.
Low cost of power, and that's the biggest expense item, right?
And if you think about it, Scott, if you pay for this system in 3 years or 4 years, after that, the next 21 years, you have free power for 21 years.
Right, which is pretty incredible.
With no escalator on it.
I would think also from a leasing perspective, right? These days where tenants have a lot more social awareness and social consciousness that feeds into their leasing decisions,
right?
That this would also help in terms of selling space.
Well, it certainly would. I think if you were a building owner and you were leasing out office space and you said, hey, our building is 100% renewable and it's powered by this power plant that we have, et cetera, I would think that socially conscious companies would say, hey, I want to be in that space there.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the physical components, right, of a project and what goes into what you do and all the factors that you have to consider.
Well, the physical components, if you think about it, everybody today can imagine a solar panel and maybe some racking and inverters and things of that nature. The major components to put together a project and make it viable, certainly we'd have to do an analysis of the structure itself. If there isn't structural drawings available, then we would go in and do an analysis of how the frame was built for the building and whether it can support and calculate what that collateral load capacity is for the roof. Then age of roof, does it need a new roof or doesn't it need a new roof? Now we work with roofing companies, and this is another bizarre thing, but as a third party, they will come in and replace the roof for free and then own the system on top of that roof and warranty the whole thing for 25 years. So there are some really aggressive programs out there, and customers are shocked by that.
Yeah, it would seem, I wouldn't have ever expected that. Maybe it's just the concept of a roofing company being progressive.
Well, just think about an aggressive commercial real estate owner that wants to purchase property and then says, it's got a bad roof. I don't really want that building. Now you come along and say, well, if you do solar, you could get that roof done and get solar to boot. It really changes the equation.
That's pretty compelling. Yeah, absolutely. And I know this is probably a hard question to answer, but for a typical project, timeline, beginning to end to commissioning and going live?
Typical project might get built in 90 days.
That's pretty fast.
120 days,
yeah.
Something like that. Okay. Permitting process and the analysis of it, I'd say somewhere around 60 days.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there an ideal customer profile for you, both from a physical building perspective and the organization?
Yeah, we do have some bullseye, as you might call them. Certainly a customer that owns the building, mm-hmm. obviously you need that. If you're a tenant in a building and you've got roof rights, then that could work too. Typically the building would consume the power that would be generated on the roof, most all of it. So we don't really want to be exporting power. As I said earlier in the conversation, we want to be able to generate the power at the source of the load. Mm-hmm. So if the load matches the generation and we can line that up on a daily basis, that's the most efficient system. Right. If you think about it, you come into the office in the morning and maybe the building's not using that much power, but as the day goes on and the sun goes up and it's hot, air conditioners kick in and other systems kick in during the day, and that's when solar is at its maximum, and then it tails off towards the end of the day.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. When you get started, who do you typically work with?
Well, generally, you would talk to ownership. You would start there. You would start with the CEO, with the owner of the business, and say, you know, is there an interest, et cetera? Is there a financial appetite to do something like that? Philosophically, are we in alignment in terms of renewable energy goals or whatever your, you know, LEED certification goals are, or just financial goals?
Yeah.
And then from there, you would branch to a finance person who would handle all of the analysis of the tax and depreciation and cost of capital, and you would branch to the facilities person that's managing the facility that says, yeah, we have, you know, here are our power bills, and this is how this building operates, and typically this is the way the building is built.
My ignorant question of the day, which will be the first of many as I work through the day, but we're in Massachusetts, right? And so historically, we just don't think about solar in the Northeast and, you know, this region, although I did see a
we're
solar
not on from, the North Pole here.
We're not, but we're heading into some gray days, right?
But you might, so you know, you might so. Even make a case for solar in the North Pole. I don't know if you see that movie Mars with Matt Damon.
Oh, with Matt Damon, sure, great
he
movie.
He was hugging those solar panels,
right?
Because those made his life existence possible on Mars.
Right.
I just love that. I really love that part of it. It's so portable, and it generated the power for his batteries, and he was able to move and breathe and live.
Yeah.
If you think about Massachusetts, we have what's called a 14% capacity factor in the state, which is a fairly high amount of sunlight on an annual basis, which generates significant return. A system today, if we had a 1 megawatt system here in Massachusetts, that would generate 1.2 million kilowatt hours a year, typically, maybe 1.3 or more, depending upon tilt. Ample sun to be able to generate power that is economically viable for any business. But if you look at Germany, which is a much higher latitude, they were doing up to 7 gigawatts a year in a country that's much, much smaller than we are.
I think that's probably a common misconception, right, is that
solar
only works in the Southwest.
Where you have 300 days of sunshine.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not a question anymore. Initially, you know, 10 years ago, it was a question. But today, everybody kind of understands we have simulators, 30-year weather data, and we say this is exactly what you're going to get. And if you go back historically and look at our customers, they are getting what we projected they were going to get in terms of power generation.
Oh, that's great.
Rain or shine or snow. And, you know, what do you do about the snow? Leave it on the panels.
You just leave it. You just leave it there.
Don't touch it.
It works.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's New England. The weather's going to change.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So it snows one day, and then the sun comes out the next day, the panels heat up, and the snow melts.
So you don't want your facilities guy going up there with a shovel.
You really don't.
Yeah.
Take it off
the panels. So are there any situations where it doesn't work?
Well, you know, a lot of times it won't work if the customer doesn't have a tax appetite or their credit rating is such that they wouldn't be a quality off-taker, investment-grade off-taker, then you're not going to get a third party to finance the system for that customer.
So they're generally financial in nature.
Or
if it's an old building.
Or if the building is just not suitable, which you see this in residential all the time. There's people that are running around putting panels on buildings that you just look at them and shake your head and go, why did they do that? It's facing east, or it's got trees in front of it, and you shouldn't put panels there.
Right.
You shouldn't do that.
Yeah. I imagine there's other people out there doing this, right? Doing this in your space. So tell us a little bit about your secret sauce. What makes you unique?
Well, there are 300 companies in the state of Massachusetts alone that are quote unquote solar companies doing a variety of different things. Our company being around one of the longest in the state, we're unique for a couple of reasons. Our business model is I own the company outright. I don't have debt and equity financing. We aren't chasing a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow where some venture capitalists would dictate that we have to have an exit in a certain amount of months or a certain amount of years or on a quarterly basis we have to run. As a result, our behavior is quite a bit different. We're a real company, and we're real people. And we say, okay, we're going to fund our expansion from the profits on our bottom line, from our balance sheet. That's how we've been successful. The other part of it is that we're vertically integrated. We do all our design in-house. We do our engineering in-house. And we install with our own install crews all in-house. Consequently, you get this continuous feedback loop. And it's sort of continuous engineering when you think about it and say, oh, well, we made a mistake on this project because we did X, Y, Z. Well, we won't do that again on the next one. And that feedback loop is very, very important. When I look at our competitors and I say, well, what do they do that we don't do? You can give them a check in the box. They will develop a project, will find a customer and develop a project. But then when it comes to engineering, they might say, okay, well, we don't really want to spend that much. We'll just use a cookie cutter design instead of a unique design for that specific building or that specific property. And then the third thing is they're going to subcontractors to do all their build for them. And then when you have that, then you have a random control over the end product. One of our partners came to us recently and said, I don't want to get caught with Joe Storm Door subcontractor, and that's who I'm working with at the end of the day. I want to be able to say to the company I contracted with, okay, where's my project and where is it going and how is it going? So accountability, responsible business model in the industry, certainly a very strong track record.
Where do you see growth opportunities from a product and market perspective for you?
Growth opportunities, I mean, this is such a wonderful market. You can apply solar just about anywhere. We look at it and say, if just in our little footprint here in this corner of New England, we're in Mass, Rhode Island, expanding into Connecticut, expanding into New Jersey, New York State, and looking at projects in California, Texas, and Maryland. So we look at it and say, hey, the world is our oyster, but the United States is really the pearl, and we definitely want to take advantage of that as much as we possibly can.
That's great. So you're not limited geographically?
No, we're not. And that's another wonderful part about doing solar is that you can go where your customers are. So we have a customer that has a location that happens to be in New Bedford, but they have four other locations in four other states in the United States. And they need solar for all of their properties.
That's great.
So, you know, we can go and implement that for them.
Okay. As a software company and a technology company, I'm interested to know, do you use software and technology?
Of course we do.
Because of running your business.
Yeah.
What kind of things are you doing?
One of the fun things about solar is that you can use software to monitor your system on an hourly basis. So you want to see what the production is. And if you're a facilities manager and you're worried about demand charges and how you're timing, turning things on and turning things off and how much kW of amperage that you're pulling into your building is going to affect your bill at the end of the day. You can use a software platform that we provide. It's a third-party software platform, but we provide with the system, and you can go online and you can see anything you want to see. You can look at volts, you can look at amps, you can look at total power factors and things of that nature. Very interesting in terms of how you manage that and how your generation works. So timing your load with the generation is a very interesting concept. And then the next piece that comes along is now the storage industry, which, you know, everybody knows that Tesla bought SolarCity, and this is sort of a big deal. What's happening there is that Tesla's not a car company, they're really a battery company. They're taking that battery technology and saying, hey, we want to marry that together with a solar operation and do it on a residential scale, maybe on a commercial scale, we'll see what they do. We look at it and say, from a software and a facilities management standpoint, hey, I can generate power, I can store it in a battery, then on off-peak hours, I can pull power off the grid and manage, from a software standpoint, manage it that way. And then during on-peak hours, let's say the sun's not shining, I can flip the battery on and power my building with the battery, and I'm not paying these peak rates for the power. So there's some really interesting software applications that are gonna come out and that currently aren't commercially available yet, but it's all going to get developed.
And is that part of your service as well, helping your customer?
Absolutely.
Do that?
Yeah. We're totally turnkey. Yeah. We try and stay abreast of the industry and really be on the leading edge of what's happening.
That's great. You have a company out there, building owner, manager, what should they think about first?
The first thing they should think about is it realistic for us to put a dent in our power bill using solar? If somebody that owns the John Hancock Tower in Boston looks at putting solar on that building, you've got a very tall, skinny building. right? You're not going to get a lot of solar on it. So that'd be the first thing I'd look at if I was a building owner. But if you're a property owner and you own a mall with a large sprawling footprint, huge parking lot and things of that nature, those buildings lend themselves really quite well to doing solar. Mm-hmm. So that'd be the first thing that you would think about, matching how many square feet of available roof space that you have to how much power you're actually consuming in the building.
Okay.
And that match is very important, because I feel that if you don't achieve 20% or 30% of the total consumption in the building, it probably doesn't make sense to go through the exercise.
Okay. Anything on the horizon? You've talked about a few things in terms of subsidies that are available, but anything else from a legislative or financial perspective that people should be aware of?
Not on the legislative side, but I think what is happening in the industry is the economies of scale are really coming to roost now.
Mm.
And we feel that as an industry, we're getting towards grid parity.
Mm-hmm.
And grid parity means that I can take an electron that's generated by a coal-fired plant, a gas plant, an oil plant, or whatever, nuke plant, and I can compare that to an electron created by a solar plant, and they're very, very close to the same value.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
Which means that we won't need incentives down the road.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of solar panels has dropped to about 35% in the last 6 months of this year.
Wow.
So there's a oversupply, there's a glut in the industry, and that will eventually work its way out. But the cost of manufacturing has come down considerably.
That's incredible. It's like big screen TVs.
It just like, or computers.
Or computers, right.
Yeah. Laptops.
Yeah.
What'd you pay for a laptop in 2001? I remember paying about $5,000 for an Apple.
I do as well.
Back then.
Which means we just dated ourselves. A few wrap-up questions. 3 to 5 takeaways. We like to give people a few things to think about. If you're a commercial real estate developer, an owner, a manager, how do you get them on their mind? What should they be thinking about? We talked about a couple of those.
They should certainly be thinking about their tax appetite. If it's a company that's profitable, it's making money, has a tax appetite, they should be thinking about solar. And there isn't a better investment, because you can set your watch by it. In terms of the schedule, I mean, it's a investment grade asset. You could build a system and sell the system if you wanted to. Investors will package these up and sell them as a block. And it is a very reliable investment. As I say to people inside my company, I'd much rather go out and get a loan from a bank to build a system that we own than to take that same money and pay it to Uncle Sam. The federal government, the IRS, is incentivizing us and motivating us to invest our money in building and doing projects. So this is one way to do it. And, you know, if I was a building owner, I'd be looking at it the exact same way.
Yeah.
If you're running a profitable business, I mean, we oftentimes get customers that say, hey, we just finished this project, can we do another one?
Always an ideal situation, right?
Yeah,
then you
right.
know,
then you know you have a customer.
You have a customer and you've done a good job for them. That's
right.
Great. How do people learn more about Beaumont Solar?
Certainly go to our website, BeaumontSolarCO.com. Contact me personally, Phil@BeaumontSolarCO.com. We'd be happy to give anyone a run through, look at their building, go on Google Earth, give them an analysis of it, and let them know what we think, and give them just a really quick snapshot. Hey, we think you can get this kind of return, and do that very quickly. We can turn something around in a day or two.
As always, the contact information for Phil and for Beaumont will be in the show notes on the podcast on our website. We'll make those available as well in the transcript. We send this out to everybody on the interwebs. But for the meantime, Phil, thank you. It was a tremendous education for me. This is great to learn, and picked up a lot of good things. And I certainly think our customers are going to be really interested in this topic, and it's something new for us. So that's terrific.
Fantastic. Look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to this broadcast of CRE Tech Talks. We hope you found today's session valuable. Remember to visit our podcast page at www.buildingengines.com/CRE Tech Talks to download today's transcript and key takeaways, as well as listen to other sessions and share with colleagues. We'll see you next time on CRE Tech Talks.